can hit anyone with a carrot or a stick, and that's the most motivational way to do things. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Jeff, how long you think humanity's got?
At this rate?
Yeah, at this rate. Assuming this constant rate.
You know, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have had a much rosier outlook on that.
Sure.
It feels like what with the global climate change, how poorly we did with a, let's be honest, very mild pandemic. On the range of potential pandemics, this one, which could honestly be curbed with a simple piece of cloth over your nose and mouth, very mild on the threat level of a pandemic, and how poorly we did with that, and the fact that we're about to get like a CRISPR-Cas9 level messing with viruses in our garage shit.
Yep.
I'm thinking, where's that doomsday clock at? You know, it's not we're not super far off.
Yeah, sadly. That's fair. I think. I think my outlook, particularly this week, is better than it's been in months.
Yes. I feel like we've moved away from maybe in the next few years to let's hope I'm dead and gone before humanity is out the door.
Yeah. Well, you asking about the doomsday clock, just so you're aware, the doomsday clock is currently at, the doomsday clock is at 100 seconds to midnight.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a lot.
It's not a lot.
I'd prefer more. I'd prefer farther away from midnight, personally.
Yeah, no, and yet we get closer, so close that we can't even say 2 minutes anymore.
God damn.
We're 100 seconds to midnight. And, you know, this is not going to be us talking about the doomsday clock and what's going on in the world as much as it is about humanity has been planning for the end of humanity since the dawn of humanity.
Oh, so this is more a story about pessimism.
This is more. Well, no, we'll get there. What I mean is, we have been ready for, everyone has been ready for Ragnarok. You know what I mean? The very term itself, Ragnarok, is of course from Norse mythology. Every civilization is like, civilization will end, and this is how it's going to end.
But see, this makes sense to me. I mean, I don't know where you're headed with this, but this makes sense to me on a certain level, even more in ancient times than it would now, because I feel like we are farther away. We are more buffered from death on a daily basis than we've ever been as a species, right? Ancient people had death all around them, right? It was constant death. People died at a younger age for more reasons.
Oh, you got to have a lot of kids because you're only going to get to keep one out of every six kids.
Yeah, you're just playing the odds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I would assume that with that level of finality staring you in the face all the time, everybody keeling over all around you at a constant rate. And then like, what do we even do with all these dead people? Anything you want to eat, you probably have to kill yourself. You know, there's death everywhere all the time. I imagine you at a certain point go, this isn't going to last.
It's not going to last, right?
We're all doomed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think, and what's interesting is I think that in addition to knowing this thing that we all know where it's like, oh, everything is doomed, where like the end of humanity will come. We accept that as inevitable and we say to ourselves, okay, but how do we make sure everybody knows we were here?
Yeah.
That's a big one. And that's a big one, like even from a personal standpoint to an entire standpoint of civilization. It's always like, how do we make sure people know that we were here? Or how do we make sure that maybe in the future there is a way to bring us back? We're that important.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? We think in those terms. How do we make sure people know we're here? We send off Voyager with the golden records, right? Or I believe we've mentioned before, I don't know if we ever did an episode on it, but the Doomsday Seed Vault you know?
Yes. Yeah. The is that the that's got like all the different plants and shit in it? The seed, literal seeds from plants, right?
Yeah. It's the Svalbard Global Seed Vault. They have 150 countries have sent them over 890,000 seeds in order to be able to bring back all of the plant life on Earth in case of some sort of catastrophic thing.
Sweet, sweet. The plants get to live on. Sweet.
Plants get to live. But we're always thinking of like, how do we protect some portion of this?
This is why I carve my name into as many things as possible. This is why I'm constantly carving my name into things, you know?
It's the chair face Chippendale
approach.
Approach to life. Are you familiar with chair face Chippendale?
I am not.
From The Tick. He's the bad guy in The Tick, and all he wants to do is build a giant laser to carve his name in the moon. Yeah, that's his entire plan.
It's good. It's
solid.
He
doesn't want to do anything, but they have to stop him because you can't carve your name in the moon. But really, he's not doing anything super bad. But you're not allowed to carve your name into the moon. But
yeah,
like,
you got to stop that. You got to stop it.
You're not hurting anybody, but at the same time, you can't be allowed to do that.
This is why I guess it falls to The Tick, right? Because no top tier superhero is going to waste their time on the moon carving guy.
Well, and in tick continuity and Tick lore, Chairface gets to CHA, so the moon says that's CHA funny. For forever.
That's so funny.
But yeah, there's this thing of like, It's the Ozymandias thing. How do we bring ourselves back? You know, look at my works, ye mighty. And so there is the latest idea comes from a team of researchers from the University of Arizona. They presented their idea at the IEEE Aerospace Conference held as of this recording last weekend. And what they want to do is they want to create a lunar arc. Jeff, you read a lot of sci-fi. You must understand immediately what a lunar arc means.
Sure. We're going to get two of every creature, put them in it's 40 cubits by 10 cubits.
It's a lot of cubits.
Kazi routine now. You send something to the moon and this is like, didn't they do this in a movie recently where they like send... we're sending like our like embryos or something to the moon, right? To like be able to hatch them.
I want to say it's a pretty common thing. Can I make a confession? Can I make a confession right now? What if I was to tell you that I have never seen that particular Christopher Nolan film?
What? You've never seen Interstellar? How is that possible? You would like it. It's good, man.
I nearly watched it on a plane once. At some point, you know, the way he intended, at some point, my brain just said, oh, no, I understand Christopher Nolan. I get it. And then it was just over. Like, I was just done with Christopher Nolan.
Oh, so have you not watched any of his films after that?
What has he done after that? Dunkirk? No, I haven't seen
Dunkirk and the latest one, Tenet.
Tenet? Oh, I definitely haven't watched Tenet, but I plan on getting it for the Game Boy Advance. His bullshit around Tenet, like I understand he wanted to open in theaters. He lost a significant chunk of money, but he's already wealthy. And putting movies in theaters at that point would have killed people. And he was very bitchy about people watching his film on television. And I'm just like, hey, man, read the fucking room right now, Christopher Nolan. I'm so over the self-important auteur who's just like, excuse me. I overworked my actors for 18 hours on specially designed gimbals that could have hurt them very badly. You should watch it on a very large screen and not the small one.
Yeah, but also Interstellar's pretty good. You should watch that.
I'm sure I would like Interstellar. I think, you know, the genius of Christopher Nolan, a friend and I were talking about this. The genius of Christopher Nolan is he can take the most wackadoo, insane concept, the most out there concept, and make it accessible and understandable for anybody, which is great.
Well, understandable is maybe a stretch when it comes to Tenet, but accessible, fun. action packed. I'll give you those.
Well, so when he, but for me, when he makes it, when he makes these things accessible, I think he sort of takes away the things. Like, I think, like when I watched Spinny Top in a Dream, Inception, when I watched Spinny Top in a Dream, I was like, this is the most boring story about being able to do whatever you want in dreams I've ever seen in my life. Do you know what I mean?
Like, give me a Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, right? That's what we want.
Baby, give me a Dream Warriors. Give me a Paprika, you know? Give me a Satoshi right. Kon. You know, if you're going to do dreams, let's get nuts, baby. You know?
You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
Let's get nuts. And well, I understand then, what he does is he takes it and he's like, no, that's too, the Paprika is too weird. Of course, Paprika is too weird. That's why I like Paprika.
That's the point. Yeah.
And he goes, no, boring heist, but sometimes a ninja. Sometimes regular gunfight, but sometimes a hallway spin. And I'm like, cool. No, I get it. And now everybody enjoys it. And you've made this weird thing, except, but I'm just kind of like, I'm good.
Welcome to our Christopher Nolan Think Piece fan cast.
Sorry, we opened up the Christopher Nolan box. We can go back to the science. We're an award-winning science podcast.
We can also switch gears to another auteur and say Ridley Scott. Have you seen the TV show he just did?
But we're not going to. We could do this. This is a direction we could go in, and we're not going to go there.
Another example of what you're talking about seeding the planet, right? Is sending the seeds to the planet.
Okay. Seeding the planet. Yes. So, yes, something like the new Ridley Scott, something like even something like a Passengers, or something like I Am Mother or something like that is sort of about that, where it's like the last of the humans and how do we rebuild, and there's a safe little space for humans somewhere, right?
Yeah. Better than, I guess, just plants. Which is how far we've gotten so far, is just the seeds of plants.
Well, that's the thing about this lunar arc, Jeff, that these wonderful scientists in Arizona would like, is this is not just plants, Jeff. This is jizz.
What? What?
This lunar arc.
I think your audio cut out.
You're right with me. This lunar arc, in a way, is seed.
Oh no!
But it's biblical seed, Jeff.
We're sending
two by two animals. Sperms? Yeah, 2x2 animals, all that shit. Deep freeze an animal. No, Jeff. Do you know how much space that would take up? We don't have that kind of space.
This is a much more efficient arc because we're talking just little vials instead of big rooms and hay and food and all that stuff.
No, buddy.
We're just talking vials now. We're talking little vials of sperm.
These scientists from Arizona are like, we need to just send 6.7 million sperm samples to the moon as a global insurance policy for mankind.
Are we sure that it's scientists and not just some real weirdo who's like, send my sperm to space. I want to shoot my wad into the low atmosphere.
Buddy, who doesn't? You know what I mean? That's hashtag goals. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Is this
different than the dude you were telling me about from The Tick? This is a little bit the same. It's just like, get my shit, spew my shit on the surface of the moon.
No, Jeff, this is science. Come on, buddy. Reel it back in. This is science.
Sorry. Okay, right. We have to.
These are serious samples of sperm. Okay.
Got it.
All of the various just animals and people from all different cultures, and we're gonna really make sure that we have genetic diversity. We're gonna put this in a lunar pit.
How much sperm are we talking about, man?
I mean, you need sperm, eggs, spores, seeds from 6.7 million different species.
Whoa.
In order to recreate a good enough Earth.
So the idea here is to send that stuff to a place and then some intelligent species, maybe us, maybe somebody else, will find it and put the building blocks together and gestate life.
This is what's interesting about this to me, right? Is this idea of with something like the Svalbard, the seed bank, or something like this, the question is, who is doing this, right? So with the Svalbard seed bank, it's sort of like, well, if there are only a few humans left after some sort of like climate thing or some sort of global conflict, whatever it is, the idea is that there would be a group of people that survive, and then these seeds would be available to them so they could terraform and rebuild the earth protect against, and even, you know, they said that the Svalbard seed bank is also supposed to protect against extinction of specific species, right? If we find that a plant has gone extinct, we go into the Svalbard bank, we regrow the species, and then we can reseed the bank. With a lunar one, the thing that's interesting to me is, okay, there's some sort of catastrophic global occurrence that destroys humanity.
Earth gone.
We're going to get back up to the moon? How long do you think it's going to take before we can get... We're not even going to have radios. We're not going to have medicine. We're not going to have... Yeah. We're not going to have refrigerators.
Yeah, how long does sperm keep?
Well, so that's a great question too, Jeff. So my first question is, who's going up to the moon to fix this? You know, I think this depends on...
Well, is the idea that someone here goes up to the moon, or is it that moon sits there for millennia upon millennia, and then later on, some other species cruising through says, oh, look at this crazy blip.
Nah, that's because the thing about that is the mathematical odds of that are astronomically large, literally, right? Like, there's no...
No, we're sending this to our future selves, not to somebody else.
The idea is potentially we are going to have some sort of an outpost on the moon. We've talked about this because it's easier to launch a craft from the moon than it is from Earth.
Right.
So in the future, perhaps we will have these outposts, and these scientists, researchers, astronauts who are on these outposts will be removed from whatever global conflict happens, and they will have what is necessary to, you know, not necessarily bring it back down to Earth, but move on to the future.
It's like a time capsule, but gooier. It's a slime capsule, if you will.
It's a slime capsule, and that's the terminology they use. Now, your second question, which is, how long does it keep?
Yeah.
So the idea here is the facility, they will be underneath the moon, protected from atmospheric and environmental issues in a...
Underneath the moon?
Yeah, it'll be in a lava pit in an underground bank. They'll build this underground bank.
This is fanfic. It's in a lava pit under the moon. I'm going to put my sperm in a lava pit under the moon.
I know. It sounds like a Frank Ocean song, but it's real. So, remember that this was presented at the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Aerospace Conference. This is science, Jeffrey. Take it seriously.
I'm trying.
Please.
You said
so what's going to happen
sperm's
is...
sperm's going to be in a lava pit on the moon, and I'm sorry.
And it's not, it doesn't have to be his sperm. It could be anybody's, like, he's not saying it's his, but maybe he'll throw a vial down there. But so it's going to be kept at perfect conditions with solar panels. You could solar power this for basically infinity. And now, next question, which I'm sure is coming up, is how are we getting all this stuff to the moon?
Right? A rocket, I'm guessing.
Yeah, a rocket, penis-shaped
rocket.
Yeah, I mean, they all are. They're all phallic.
Yeah.
So they're all acceptable.
They all work. Yeah.
They all work. So basically, the idea is over 250 flights to the moon.
What? We have to just keep pumping the moon over and over and over 250 times until we finally deposit our sperm in it? Inside it?
Yeah. Jeff, You can't just one and done the moon. That's not cool. You do two trips and you're out? No, Jeff, you got to think about the moon as well. It's not just about you. You got to be, you can't be selfish that way.
You're saying this is sort of a, like a slow and steady, we're working up to the ultimate delivery is what you're saying.
Yes, it's a, that's, it's a, that's it.
A process that has to build and,
to a crescendo. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So,
I mean, that's what we have to do.
The theory here is, as we're building a lunar colony, as we're building a lunar base, we will be taking multiple missions up to the moon anyway. Uh-huh. So over these missions to the moon, you take one collection of samples each time from different species. Okay. And over 250 missions, you will eventually populate this lava pit bank with every single one of those 6.7 million species. Now,
it's like developing a Funko Pop collection, right?
Yeah.
You don't buy all the Funkos right away.
No.
You know, right? But you slowly work up to it. You build your collection over time.
And then at some point you turn around and you realize it's all Funko Pops. What have you done?
Exactly.
Why didn't you slow down? And
much like this mission, you realize it was an extraordinary waste of time and money.
How dare. So this is science, Jeffrey. Take it seriously. Okay. Now, the idea here is, it sounds like a lot, right? 250 mm-hmm. sounds like a lot of trips. But building the International Space Station took 40 trips. So if we're building a lunar colony, you can assume right. that a lunar colony will take probably the number of trips that it would take
right.
to seed this bank. Like, it's just like, hey, as long as we're doing this, if this yeah, is the plan,
this is not, we're not specifically sending trips just to put our sperm on the moon. We're also putting our sperm on the moon.
It's not, nobody, this guy's not jizzing into a cup and handing it to NASA and going, now you take it to space.
Right. Yeah. This isn't
I did it. Now you take it to space. I did my part.
This isn't like an Amazon next day
delivery
situation.
This is $40 million jizz. You send it up there.
Right. Right. This is more
that's
like
not
bulk
what's going
shipping
on.
Is what this is. It's more, yeah. You're going anyway. Could you also swing by?
Exactly.
And drop my jizz off.
Exactly. Yeah. You order a few things from AliExpress.
Yeah.
And they're not things you need right now. They get to you in a month and it's like yeah. you bought a little present for yourself. This is the same thing. We're buying a present for a future humanity. We are giving ourselves the ability. Now, the right. idea here is not just something catastrophic happens or the Earth gets wiped out, but the idea is also like, hey, if we are launching from the moon towards other planets and we are going to terraform those other planets, when it's time to terraform those other planets, we will have seeds and spores and also the eggs and sperm from animals that we can use to begin right. to terraform those planets to have what we need.
Wouldn't it be easier to just put DNA samples instead of, I mean, couldn't you accomplish the same goal by just cloning DNA at some point rather than
at
having
some
to
point.
Mix sperm with egg and get it in a womb? I mean, I guess you do that with cloning as well, but
yeah, I mean, we're not really there yet though, right? Like we've talked about a lot of these sort of cloning, experiments and things that are being done. And there's a lot of trouble getting clones to take, you know?
Yeah.
And especially it's, you know, you would wonder how that would work in space as well. Like
right.
how would that change the process of cloning? How will that actually, I mean, there's something fairly fascinating in how would that change the process of gestating these animals?
Yeah.
Or growing these plants. So there is a lot of science that can be done with this. And it all you have to do is get every animal to jizz in a cup.
And I suppose there's some, this guy,
that's
he's
the
got
first
some,
step.
This guy's got some volunteers for that job. He's got a few ideas about how we can accomplish that.
Well, you know, they don't really go into that. they just say that, you know,
we're gonna have to get
it will
6
bring
million
us closer.
Species to jizz in the cup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
Yeah. It says, there, you know, a project like this will bring mankind closer to becoming a space civilization, and to a not very distant future where humankind will have bases on the moon and Mars.
Right.
It's actually a very, it's a very complicated multidisciplinary project that requires a lot of different, a lot of different teams.
Techniques. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of different people to be on board, right?
Yeah.
So
on board, down below board.
Yeah.
Jerking frequently. Mm-hmm. Hey, can I give you a hypothetical? And this, I may be thinking about this.
I feel like you're not taking this science seriously, Jeffrey.
I'm about to ask you a very probing scientific question.
Okay.
And this may be influenced by my story, which I'm going to do in the second half of the show. Mm-hmm. So I may have this on my mind, but let's say we go to the moon as human beings and we set foot on the moon and we find something there.
Yeah.
And it is a collection of all the sperm of all the dinosaurs that ever existed on Earth. Somehow the dinosaurs got their sperm and placed them on the moon.
This was a Dinotopia situation. This was a Jim Henson's dinosaurs situation.
Yes, exactly. They went extinct on this planet, but before they did that, they had the forethought.
This is a Super Mario Brothers the movie situation.
Yeah, so they sent their dino sperm in dino rockets.
Dino DNA.
Up to the moon. What do you think we should do with that material that we have discovered?
I would lose my goddamn mind if we if we drilled into a lava pit to build this living moon base bank of genetic material, and we found genetic material from a past civilization there.
Yeah.
I would lose my goddamn mind, dude.
Do we birth those people?
Hey, that's copyright us. We just wrote that script and mailed it to ourselves. That's copyright us.
You can't take that. We own that right
now. Tom Merritt, I know you're listening. Write your own novel, asshole.
Don't steal our ideas, Tom.
Dickhead.
Man, that guy writes novels so fast.
Because he steals from us.
Seriously, though, do we... In that situation, that hypothetical, do we birth a dead civilization?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that seemed very easy for you to answer.
Yeah. 100%. I feel
like it's a more complicated ethical dilemma than that.
No. Here's what's up. It becomes a complicated ethical dilemma when we birth the thing. And
then it destroys us all?
No, more like it has to live amongst us as the only one of its kind. That's a little sad, but also...
Why would we only make one of them if we've got 6 million samples?
You got to start small, Jeffrey. You're not going to make all 6 million at once. That's stupid.
I don't know. I think Tom Merritt would have...
You start with like a few plants and you see what kind of succulents they had. You know,
you start with the plants. Yeah,
you start with
the
plants and you create like a little living wall, you know, a little greenery on the moon base.
Yeah.
You know, brighten everybody's day. See what that was like. And then you move up to some little, you know, some smaller life forms. And then maybe, you know, once you have like a little biome going, you make yourself a little whatever the intelligent species was, and you go, here you go, buddy. This is where you were meant to live, in this clay, in this glass case.
Oh, I see. So you're building a little universe for them first.
Yeah, this is a Slaughterhouse 5 Twilight Zone space zoo jail situation, I think.
Ah.
And I don't think there's anything ethical. I mean, yes, it's ethically sad, but we still have to do it for science for knowledge.
In our film script, we start with just a regular intelligent species thinking they're living their lives.
And who's got the time?
But then they discover it's all a facade. No?
I think there are two ways you can go. You can start with, you can be like, oh, we're just going to start small with the plant life and blah, blah, blah. And then it does turn out that the plant life is somehow parasitic or something like that or dangerous. But the other way, in a film, you would want to just go straight to the intelligent species.
No, what I'm saying is we
start in the fishbowl. You want to find out if it's lonely or it's fuckable.
No, what we do, we start out POV of the intelligent life who doesn't know that it was birthed in this simulacrum. this simulacrum of its dead planet, right?
Sure.
And then you've Truman Show-esque, you discover that it's all a facade and that everything had been birthed out of the discovered sperm of a dead civilization.
There are so many ways you can take this, and they're all copyright us, Tom Merritt. So that's a bummer for you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I think this is really fascinating, and it is silly and a little gross, but it's also like, it comes for me, it does come back to the ego that we were talking about in the beginning.
Oh, completely. The audacity of us to think that if our world dies,
we deserve a second chance.
Yes. And in this way, it's like, we're going to think so far ahead. We're so certain that we're going to screw this up that we're literally just going to send this like Hail Mary pass to our future selves. You know, it's such the worst kind of thinking, you know?
Yeah. What if instead of, you know, and they say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of jizz, Jeff. And I think that, you know, you could do things like make sure that everybody has health care and housing and food and sort of de-escalate the military stuff and the things that we know will eventually lead to this terrible demise instead of like Philip K. Dicking this shit, literally and figuratively.
Putting the dick in Philip K. Dick.
We're like, oh, we rebuilt, and oh, it turns out that we made the same mistakes over again. Oh, gee. No, dude, no. Yes, there's probably room on those space missions for the jizz, but what if also healthcare? And then we don't have to worry as much about the jizz. Yeah.
Maybe we think for half a second about climate change rather than doing 240 missions to space to plant our jizz in the lava pit on the moon.
We're so worried about some hypothetical inevitable future. And we're willing to avert that. And we are not willing to look at or help out the problems of today. We love to think hypothetically and not, you know, in a grounded way. And I think it's fascinating. I also think it's kind of a cool idea and I'm kind of into it.
I think it's a terrible idea.
It's not high up on my list of priorities, but the same way I think the Svalbard seed bank is a cool idea, I think this is a cool idea. But I just think like, hey, there's a lot of better stuff we could be spending our money on, but also I don't think that this stuff is the stuff that's taking away the money we could spend. I think maybe it's like, oh, well, the stock market failed because of a global pandemic. So let's put, you know, $100 billion into the stock market. Like maybe that could have gone to something else. You know, don't pull away the jizz factory on the moon.
You're saying don't pull out.
Don't pull out of the jizz. Yeah, don't pull out early. You cannot pull out of this early. It's ineffective, and that's been proven. If you pull out of something like this early to stop it, you can't stop it.
No, agreed. The pullout method does not work. We can agree on that.
We all agree with that. And I just think these are, in a way, the hopeful, optimistic, kind of cool things that are going on. There's a lot of terrible shit we can take money away from first, you know?
I just feel like the odds of this thing being any use at any point is so low. At least the seed bank, you feel like it's for here, right? If there are things that go out, if there are stuff that goes extinct, if there are plants that we can go and just pluck a seed from the thing. It doesn't feel like you can just grab one species from the lava pit on the moon. It's not what it's for.
You're going up, like say we're sending some cargo up to the moon base, right? So cargo goes up to the moon base. Who knows what it is? Maybe it's food or fuel or I don't know, material for the 3D printers up there, whatever it is they need. And while they're up and somebody says like, NASA goes like, hey, while you're up there, because at that
grab
point, we're going to have
spotted owl jizz out of the freezer.
Yeah, while you're up, grab me some spotted owl jizz on your way back. I'm out of spotted owl.
Yeah.
Grab me some of the jizz on your way home. If you're a good partner, you're on the way anyway. You could just pick up the spotted owl jizz.
Listen, it's not my job to get your spotted owl juice.
Whose job is it while you're out and I'm here taking care of Earth while you're up on the moon doing God knows what?
Poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on mine.
Wow. They're your spotted owls too. You use the spotted owls just as much as I do. And you'd like to pretend that you don't, but you do. So why don't you pick us up? Why don't you pick us all, everybody in the Earth? Why don't you pick everybody up some spotted owl on your way home?
It always falls to me to bring the jizz back from the moon. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you're the one who goes to the moon.
I think this is a terrible plan.
That's fine. What do you all think, concerned citizens? You can let us know on Twitter. I'm at A. Carboni. He's at Jeff Cannata. But you can also let us know on that Discord.
Oh, that's a great place to go. But you know what? In order to access this phenomenal Discord full of fantastic folks,
you do not have to jizz in a cup. That is not where we're going.
No. You can. It doesn't help in any way, but
we don't yuck anybody's yum, but we don't want it is what we're saying.
We're not going to kink shame you. You have to become a patron, however, and that just costs as little as $1 a month. Who couldn't do $1 a month? $1 a month gets you that Discord over at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. And there's so many other higher tiers that get you even better stuff like extra episodes, hangouts, bonus content, all kinds of fun stuff. Check it out. patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Anthony.
Jeff.
I teased that we'd be talking about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And I'm going to deliver on that promise.
Good. That's called Chekhov's dinosaur.
That's right. You gotta come through on the dinosaurs. This is a fascinating story that was sent to us by Cahoots himself, Jeff Engelstein.
Fucking make it less obvious that you're in cahoots, in all honesty.
It's good stories. He sends good stories. And this is a story about a mystery involving the dinosaurs that I didn't even know was a mystery.
Oh, I love a good mystery.
Yeah. So it turns out there are various species of dinosaurs, many, many, many species of dinosaurs. And we know of them. We've cataloged them hundreds and hundreds of species of dinosaurs.
One's a can opener. One's a wrecking ball. One is it's a living is what I'm saying.
I don't even know what you're referencing.
I'm referencing the Flintstones.
Oh yeah. Okay, I get you. No, that's good. Slow on the uptake. The thing that I never really put together is that even when you look through dinosaur books and science texts and all that stuff, you'll see a whole bunch of really small sized dinosaurs, like chicken size.
I love the little ones.
And then you'll see massive, enormous T-Rex sized dinosaurs, you know, your Brontosaurus, your Triceratops. Where are the mediums?
Jeff, where are the mediums?
So the big ones are called megatheropods. And those are the famous dinosaurs. Those are the ones that you always hear about. But there's also a ton of species of really teeny tiny ones.
Working class dinosaurs that make it happen that you don't hear about.
Exactly. But particularly in the carnivorous variety, herbivores have a little bit more variety in size and shape. But particularly with the carnivores, there's small ones that are like under 100 kilograms.
Okay.
And megatheropods, which are over 1,000 kilograms. And there's this huge gap in the fossil record of anything in between. It's just a complete gap. And scientists have wondered, what's up with that? What's up with that?
Off the top of my head, there was no sort of ecological need for them. And so that's why they didn't develop. That's, you know, like there was something for the smalls to do. There was something for the larges to do, but there was no environmental or biological imperative for the mediums to exist. Maybe that's it, but I can't figure out what that would be.
You're really close. It's actually not that there was no need. It was that those sizes were pushed out by the juveniles of the megatheropods. So
they got bullied to death.
Exactly. So even though these megatheropods grew to be over 1,000 kilograms, enormous, you can imagine them, you know, you're looking at the big bones in the museum, the huge, huge dinosaurs, Jurassic Park, you know, walking through the brontosaurus, et cetera.
Yeah.
Even though they grew to that size, all of those dinosaurs started out at about 15 kilograms. They were all came from eggs that hatched and started super small.
Yeah, everybody's just a baby at some point.
Yeah, so even though they were giant, at some it's not like they had giant eggs. They didn't start, you know, proportionately giant. They
Wait,
still started
super
small.
How big were the
small.
Eggs, though? The eggs had to have been big. I mean,
right,
I'm
but
sure
they were not. They weighed very little and were very small right. creatures.
Right, less they than just 15 aren't kilograms. As big as I'm. Crazy they just small. They just aren't as big as I'm picturing.
Right.
Got
and
it.
And so what happened was, or what scientists are theorizing, is that they progressed through the stage of that middle size so fast that they basically elbowed out any species that just lived at that size. They used up all the resources in the environment. They ate everything that was proportional to that size, to the detriment of anything that would stay that size.
Yeah, it's the kids in junior high that are going through the growth spurts and they eat all the fucking pizza.
Right.
They get like 4 or 5 slices of pizza before you can even get 1 slice of pizza.
Yeah, and they're growing so fast that they push you around. And that's what's happening here. Did you know the average age of a megatheropod, the average age of a T-Rex, for example, when it died? What would you guess that is?
20.
Really close, dude. It's between 16 and 19 years old.
Wow.
I was shocked when I read that. I had no idea. I thought
they're just so big.
They grow so fast. They get to maturity so fast, and then they die really quickly at the age of maturity. They get to sexual maturity where they can reproduce, and then they die.
The James Dean of dinosaurs.
They are all dinosaurs are James Dean.
You did. All dinosaurs are James Dean. Live fast, die young, leave a dinosaur corpse.
That's right. Which we found by the hundreds. So this was the theory that scientists wanted to test. And this paper in the journal.
But wouldn't we have found at least the juvenile bones or early bones? We should have found some record of these mediums.
Yeah, it's not that there was zero evidence of them. It is that there are so few at this size that it didn't make any sense. Because
gotcha.
Every other mammal on Earth, well, they aren't mammals, right? But every other animal on Earth, particularly mammals, that you see, you can track a proportion of sizes across species, right?
Gotcha.
And in this paper, there's a really interesting graph that shows how other species that we know that exist now are proportional based on mass and size, right?
Okay.
But with dinosaurs, you don't find that. You find some juveniles at a certain size, but the vast fossil record has this huge gap in between the 100 kilogram and 1,000 kilogram sizes. So it doesn't make any sense. Why would that species not have, you know, these range of species not have it when every other range of species that we observe on Earth does?
Yeah.
So how they tested this was they took an immense amount of data that has been compiled into a single database of all of the dinosaur fossils that we have found. It's over 550 dinosaur species in 43 ancient ecosystems across 136 million years and 7 continents.
Whoa.
Just a huge amount of fossil data. It's called the Paleobiology Database.
Hey, paleontologists and biologists, fucking good work. I had no idea we had that many samples. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are these sort of mass grave sites where huge numbers of them have been found. And then there's sort of the sporadic spread out ones, all a variety of different circumstances, right? It's not just one, it's just, you know, seven continents, different biomes. Just, it kind of eliminates any specific variability.
Yeah.
And they found this gap to be present in all of it. So what did they do? So they took this data and they went, okay, if we were to see that kind of gap, if we were to see like a dearth of resources at this size range for carnivores, how many juveniles would it require and what kind of time period of their lifespan would it need to take up? So they start building
dinosaur CSI.
Yeah, they start building a model of this, a computer model of the data of like, okay, based on what we see with mammals on Earth or now, you know, how many of them would it take to use up all the resources? And it turns out it maps exactly to what we think the population would have been.
Wow.
So they've pretty much proved that this could very, very well be a legitimate explanation for why we see this gap, that there's like, it's crazy that the juveniles that were growing up, these things that were going to turn into megatheropods, that were going to be these massive dinosaurs, they were changing their methodology and their eating patterns, like how they hunted, what they hunted, what they ate. They were changing it so rapidly because now you're one size, you can kill and eat certain things. Then you get bigger, you can kill and eat other things. Then you get a little bit bigger, you can. And they're doing that so quickly.
It's called the Katamari system.
It's exactly what it is. It's Katamari Damacy. They're just like rolling over everything.
Yeah. You can't subsume that traffic cone yet, but like if you go back and you get a few more matchbooks.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then all the traffic cones and matchbooks are pushed out, don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's I get what you're saying, right? Is as they're going up through the range of sizes, they require the same resources as things that are that size.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when they're the size of like a, you know, something that's a cow and there's something else that's the size of a cow, well, these things are going to eat everything that those things that are the size of a cow need. And then they get bigger and then they're the size of an elephant. And then they eat everything that elephants need. And then they get bigger.
Exactly. And they're just, but they're not done, right? They're getting all the way up to the big size and then they're dying out. So they just elbow out all the things that would have stopped growing at that midpoint.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I do. It's weird to me. Like you would think that an equal number of them, maybe not an equal number, but you would think a number of them would also not make it because like, okay, if I'm something that's the size of an elephant and then there are elephants, like the elephants are also eating from the environment. And so maybe they would push a few of me out as well. You'd think it would even out. In some way, you know?
Yeah, but I think the idea is that, you know, they're, as juveniles, they're also being assisted by their, you know, their pack or their parent. I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
They're on their way to maturity. They haven't reached
maturity yet. They have protection.
And I think the key factor in all this is how fast it happens, right? Because if they're not sticking around, it takes them 16 years to go from 15 kilograms to 1,000, right? It's an incredibly rapid accumulation of mass and an incredibly rapid progression through the food chain, right? Because they're moving up that food chain fast.
Oh, you know, and the other thing is like, okay, if I'm an adult elephant and I'm the size of an elephant, that means that I am the part of the elephant population that survived all of the dangers of childhood, right?
Right.
Whereas these things are the children. They're not even the adults yet. So you talk about the size of like a litter of tyrannosaurs.
Right. Yeah.
You have many more of them that are just born and have not been killed off because of the environment yet.
Yeah.
And so there are many more of them. Oh, that's fascinating.
And it, and the reason that we see that more in carnivores than herbivores is because the herbivores just have a more abundant and ubiquitous food source.
Sure.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
If they're getting fed upon,
if you eat 3 yards of grass next to me and I was going to eat that grass, I just turn around and eat the other grass.
Exactly.
But if we're both hunting the same thing and you catch it, whoops.
I catch it to the point of extinction.
Right. And there are six of you because you're babies. You haven't been killed by the wild yet. And there's one of me and I'm an adult. Shit, man.
Yeah.
You ain't eating.
It's pretty wild. It says, although the overall distribution of carnivore body size was consistent, the gap itself was dynamic. From the Jurassic to the Cretaceous, the size gap in carnivore species shifted toward larger sizes, mirroring the evolutionary increase in overall dinosaur size. So it's like, as you see, it doesn't matter the time period. It doesn't matter the location on Earth.
Yeah.
The fact that as they were growing, as they were getting bigger, they were just eating up all of the things in those same size ranges as they went along.
That's amazing.
Right?
Little langoliers.
Yeah. They said it in the article, it says, it would be as if we looked at the Serengeti and we saw creatures the size of like muskrats and then creatures the size of an a lion, but nothing in between.
Whoa.
Right? Isn't that wild?
But then that begs the question to me, why haven't we seen that in our own ecosystem?
Right. Well, I think that's because nothing that gets to be that size starts out as small and grows as quickly.
Ah.
Right. It's a bigger range of shit they need to eat and faster. And so it like had a disproportionate impact on the ecology of the planet.
Huh. More biodiversity.
Right.
Huh. I love this.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
See, Kahoot sends good stories, man.
He does, but I mean, like, come on, you guys.
Oh, you do make a good point with the come on.
Yeah, but also, like, if I could just respond, come on, you guys. Leave some science for somebody else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As long as it's not Tom Merritt.
Right. We don't want to give that guy any more ideas. He's so prolific. And they're so good, his books.
I can't get over, man. So here's the thing. Sperm bank on the moon that saves us for the future.
Right.
You call that worthless.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Finding out why there were no medium dinosaurs. Not time worthless.
Time well spent.
Time well spent. Okay. What do we do with that?
My favorite, I'm so glad you asked, because my favorite sentence in this article is the attempt to answer that question.
I love
which
it. Go.
Is how they conclude. It's how they conclude the article. And it's meant to really definitively answer your question. But you tell me if it does. Here's the quote. The study's emphasis on how animals' niches can change as they grow offers fresh insights, says Mike Benton, a paleontologist at the University of Bristol. It will make people look at predator-prey interactions in a different way. Period.
I think my space jizz story is equally useful, if not different more way. Useful.
It's good. Different way. It's different now.
But this is what I'm saying, Jeff. You can't look at me and say that's useless. When
I just think it's useless to us because we'll be all dead, and I
except
don't.
Except for the three brave scientists living on the moon that will terraform the next planet.
Uh huh.
And create Earth 2.
Yeah, I guess.
And then whose story is useful, Jeff? Maybe they will use this information and be like, well, what animals are we bringing back? Let's take a look at the predator-prey relationship.
Let's craft ourselves an ecology.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? We have historically zero problems with crafting ourselves in ecology. That's why I believe in terraforming, because we have no history of bringing foreign species to a new land and destroying that land. We are going to do so good. We're going to terraform so rad.
Dude, I'm telling you what's going to happen with this Jizz project is,
and that's what it's called.
Yeah. The Jizz project. What's going to happen is
Maxwell was working on that. It was going to be a double disc album.
It's too bad we never got to see that.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is that our descendants, the generation that has to rebuild and finally goes back to the moon, finally gets there, gets to the moon, gets down to our lava pile, finds our mini fridge with just vials and vials of jism inside them.
And Bang energy drink.
Right, because how else would we have gotten down there, you know what I'm saying, without getting a real surge of adrenaline? They'll get to it and they'll be like, oh look, all of Earth's animals and creatures and plants and humans, fuck all these people, fuck all of them, we're not doing shit with this. That's what I predict.
I think they might bring back a few people, but they already gonna be people, so they're fine. I think they use plants and animals. I think that's what they'll use. I think the idea that, like, hey, we're gonna leave the genetic information of a bunch of different kinds of people there. I mean, they might use it for the purposes of reproducing without genetic issues. You know, that's the easy way to make sure that you have future generations without the problems of inbreeding. But I don't think they'll do more than they need to. I wouldn't. Problem is too many people.
They got bigger fish to fry. They're trying to get out into there's a dead planet behind them, a whole galaxy ahead of them. They ain't got time for jizz.
Ain't nobody got time for jizz.
Nobody got time for your fridge of jizz. I'm just saying.
No, I feel that. I think they will mostly use the plants and animals. I think they will only use the human genetic material to make sure that they can reproduce the healthiest humans possible. That's it.
I guess you could like open up a real cool like specialty restaurant, you know, like the Dead Planet Cafe, you know, where you get to
imagine
like,
they don't bring Earth back. Imagine we go to Mars and we terraform a completely new kind of thing on Mars, or we go even further, right? We go to like a Proxima B or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? We find a way to get to Proxima B and it's dope and we don't need any of that Earth shit. And we just build a cool theme restaurant.
Savor the flavors of dead Earth. You know?
Oh my God. The restaurant at the end of the universe, right?
That's what like, it is.
That's what we do. It's like, listen, I'm tired of eating Blagizgal. We have Blagizgal every night.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Earth Cafe and have a cow steak.
Yeah, you know, our ancient ancestors used to eat this shit like crazy.
Yeah,
they left us all this jizz so we can make our own.
We can have our own cow steak. And let me tell you something, when you eat it, you can feel the cholesterol. You can feel how unhealthy it is.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of the fun of it.
You can understand how they fucked this planet hard.
God, two that's incredibly science. Useful stories.
That's and science. That's why the people tune in. That's why they become patrons. It's because only here do we have the guts to get into the hard science.
That's right. And that's why we're an award-winning science comedy podcast. And if you'd like to support us in the future so we can talk about more of this science and help Tom Merritt write books, you can do so by heading to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. And support us for as little as a dollar a month, which will give you access to the Discord community. You know, some people are like, what's a Discord? Imagine Slack if you use Slack for work. Imagine Slack, but nobody annoys you on it.
I love how you envision a listener who doesn't know what Discord is, but does know what Slack is.
Oh, it happens.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing, because a lot of people have to use Slack for work, but they don't know what a Discord is. Hey, Discord is just like, it's a bunch of different chat rooms. Come hang out in our chat rooms. ASL, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I seek you.
That's what it's about. So join up for $1 a month or more at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns, and we'll see you next week.